were up over March 2016, up by about 1.2%, and you know that's certainly good news. But when you look at the first quarter of 2017, four of the five northern boats have seen winter road compared to the January through March period in 2016. So you know, that's not good news, but that really mirrors what we've been seeing statewide. You know, what is good also is that the win per admission keeps going up, and that means that the casinos are managing to attract the higher value patrons. You know, they're not necessarily seeing that much of a revenue decrease as they could from the lower value players who may be sticking around Illinois to play those VGTs in the bars, taverns, laundromats, and scuba shops outside of Cook County there. Yeah.
One of the things we have talked about in the past here when it came time to talking about the casino revenues is the impact of the soon-to-be-built Native American casino that's going to be over around the South Bend area. And it may be a little early to know yet, but have you gotten any clues in the people you've talked to that maybe that the casinos here in the region are trying to come up with some kind of strategy that will in turn counter whatever they feel they're going to lose when that casino opens?
I think that each of the casinos is concentrating on what they think that they do best and how they can differentiate themselves from that particular venue. Part of the problem they face is that they don't know what they're going to face, and that's quite literally. We don't know if the Pokagon Band of Potawatomi Indians is going to open a casino in South Bend that will have table games or not have table games. They're saying right now that they're looking at opening what's called a Class 2 facility, which will have what we refer to as slot-like machines. They won't be quite like the actual slot machines that you see in the commercial casinos, but they will, you know, for all outward appearances to most players, look like and act like the slot machines in the commercial casinos. But in order to have actual slot machines, in order to have table games, the Pokagons are going to have to negotiate a compact with the state. And there's some difference of opinion as to whether they would prefer to open with Class 3, which is the full commercial casino approval from the state, you know, in terms of a negotiated compact, or that they'd be content to open as a Class 2 facility and then, you know, continue to negotiate with the state toward upgrading what they've got. So the casinos don't know what they're going to be competing against yet in South Bend, so it makes life a little bit difficult for them. Without the need for any kind of state approval, you know, the Pokagons can essentially do what they want in terms of keeping all their revenue and not tithing anything to the state. But in negotiating a compact with the state, they'd be able to perhaps get table games in exchange for, you know, some kind of promise from the state that there wouldn't be competition from a certain radius, and they wouldn't make any kinds of changes in the gaming laws that would specifically negatively impact the Native American gaming in St. Joe County too. Mm-hmm. And that's significant because there was an attempt, for example, in this session to set up a pilot program for VGTs in St. Joseph County only. So that was, you know, directly aimed at the Pokagons, and the Pokagons would certainly like to have some kind of assurance that the state wouldn't authorize, for example, a casino in Fort Wayne if they were to allow the move of a casino license from elsewhere in the state. So there are advantages and disadvantages on both sides from negotiating a gaming compact, and I'm sure that the casinos will be putting some pressure on the governor as the governor starts to take the first steps toward negotiating compact, which has not been done yet.
I'm sure that the folks in South Bend are probably very anxious about the fact that there could possibly be a casino license in Fort Wayne, because that would put them right smack in the middle of just close enough to two areas, not only to Fort Wayne, but also, of course, to Northwest Indiana. They've got the casinos on either side of them there, so that's going to have, I'm sure, an impact as well, too.
They are also feeling a little bit whipsawed in South Bend because they have negotiated a specific tithe for the city of South Bend from the casino revenues and some money up front as well to cover things like public safety and roads and all that, because they're not going to be paying any kind of taxes to either the state or the locality from their land or any of their sales, anything like that. But at the same time, the legislature has been working on trying to take away some of the riverboat revenue sharing money, which, as you know, has been a key issue for the communities in Northwest Indiana during right. this session. And, you know, that's something that, you know, again, the state has a little bit of leverage on.
Let's take some time now, Ed. You've kind of mentioned what the lawmakers had to consider during the legislative session. Let's hear more, if you will, taking a bigger look at the 2017 General Assembly session just ending on what you think had turned out, how things managed to work out, especially with coming up with a new two-year state budget and some pretty major issues, and one, of course, in particular, dealing with infrastructure in Indiana.
Well, we passed what state leaders are referring to as the largest infrastructure bill in state history, although I think some people are overlooking the old canals bill that bankrupted the state back in 1836 to 1840 or so. Mm-hmm. And they're also saying that this is one of the largest infrastructure bills that's passed in the country. And it will certainly mean a great deal for the maintenance of roads from you know, literally Gary to New Albany and from Fort Wayne to Evansville. And it will also mean a great deal to local road maintenance as well. But we're really talking at this point maintenance and repair and renovation and things like that. The major road building projects on a statewide basis really have not been funded or identified yet. You know, I think there's a lot of legislative enthusiasm for six-laning, for example, I-65 all the way from Gary to Jeffersonville, but the money isn't there yet for that. And the legislation, the bill that was just passed, does authorize the state to look at tolling and, in fact, mandates that the Indiana Department of Transportation put together a report for the legislature and the governor on tolling, and it basically puts the question of tolling out 6 or 7 years from now, which, you know, may be pretty good for a governor who's not going to be looking at seeking re-election in 7 years, or legislative leaders like Senator Long in the Senate and Speaker Bosma in the House who may not be there in 6 or 7 years. But it does put a burden on elected officials going forward to make those kinds of choices. And as people who live north of U.S. 30 well recall, you know, there were no, while there was no political courage, I guess you'd call it, I think that's how Governor Daniels referred to it back then, mm-hmm. there wasn't the political courage on the part of Democrats or Republicans who held the governor's office for 30 years to raise the tolls on the Indiana toll road.
Yeah, and we know what happened.
That was one of the reasons why the state leased that.
That's right. And we've noticed that at least that motion to that move at least certainly was successful. The company that's running the toll road is seemingly doing pretty well. If they're doing some work that is probably long overdue, of course, in such things as the toll plazas. In fact, I think one of the new toll plazas is going to open up at one of our Northwest Indiana exits on the toll road here yet this week. So there will be some people watching to see how successful these moves that the ITR Concessions Company is making to try to make the Indiana toll road a much better way to travel. So I'm sure if they have success with that may or may not make a difference about making more toll roads in the state, you know, I-65 or any of the other current interstates, to be sure. We know besides the issue of infrastructure, and roads in particular, and work on bridges. There's some other things as well, too, that lawmakers had to deal with here to try to strengthen the state's business climate and taxation as well, too. What are some of the other things that you've seen that you think should be noteworthy here as we wrap up our conversation today?
Well, again, obvious to anybody in your neck of the woods is the double-tracking authorization and funding for mm-hmm. the South Shore Railroad. And believe it or not, people in Indianapolis and legislators from the southern part of the state as well fully understood the economic importance of doing this. And they see this as not only a major business initiative, but as something that is kind of a broader economic development tool for the state, because it's going to attract people to live in Indiana, even if they want to work in the Chicago area. So double tracking the South Shore is a very big economic plus for the state. There are some other things that really got overlooked and were almost last minute kinds of things in the budget that will also prove important. The governor got himself the authorization to spend a bunch of money. I think it was somewhere between $20 and $30 million on different kinds of economic development initiatives, essentially at his own and at the IEDC's discretion. There's also some additional funding for direct flights from the state, in particular for some overseas initiatives and things like that. We've seen that when we were able to get direct flights nonstop, in particular from Indiana to San Francisco, from Indianapolis in particular to San Francisco, mm-hmm. the Silicon Valley, that the business leaders, the tech leaders in particular, were very, very pleased. And, you know, there were some subsidies that were involved in that initially, and it's turned out that the subsidies don't have to be fully implemented because the flights are largely paying for themselves. So it took a little bit of persuasion, particularly for legislators from the southern part of the state, to go along with that, but they got that. One thing that I think was a real surprise that didn't happen, that was so highly touted at the beginning of the session and is a very important initiative to the state, is the entire question of career and technical education and the workforce realignment. And this was something that was a major personal point of privilege, I guess you'd call it, on the part of House Speaker Brian Bosma. And it just proved to be a much harder issue to get through and to really convince legislators about the importance of than it probably should have been. And I think that you're going to see a lot of time spent over the summer and fall in terms of educating legislators on this career technical education and the question of adult training and worker retraining as we go into 2018. I think that's one of the key unfinished agenda items that you're going to see return in 2018 because of its economic importance.